Next item on the agenda, number 14, proposal to amend Chapter 4 of VAC 20-510-10 pertaining to amberjack and cobia to adopt commercial and recreational fishing regulations required by the recently approved Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission Management Plan for cobia.
Good afternoon, Commissioner and Associate Commissioners. My name is Ryan Jurley, Fisheries Management Specialist with the agency. This is a public hearing. I do have some public comments that came in late. If you want, I can pass them out now.
Sure. Bring them up and continue.
Two sets here.
All right, sir. Thank you.
So this is a public hearing. Last October, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission adopted an interstate fisheries management plan for cobia. This is done at the annual meeting in Norfolk, Virginia. This came about because the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, who was initially the primary manager of the cobia fishery, only has jurisdiction in federal waters. And there had been some overages of the annual catch limit, which is just that coastwide quota. So there had been a number of overages in both sectors, but because the South Atlantic Council only had jurisdiction in federal waters, there had been some consternation about what can be done. And so they requested that the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission develop a complementary plan. And as a result of that complementary plan being adopted in 2017, there are some required amendments that need to be made in both sectors that will put Virginia into compliance in the agreed-upon measures. So I'll start with the recreational sector first, and these are the recreational cobia regulations in Virginia state waters as they stood in 2017. 40-inch total length minimum size limit, one per person possession limit, three per vessel per day, whichever happens to be more restrictive. And of those three, only one over 50 inches total length is allowed. And as of last year, the season was June 1st through September 15th. That was the open season. And for the past two seasons, gaffing has been prohibited for the recreational sector. And so with regards to the recently adopted plan, what the VMRC, what the commission needs to do is establish a combination of regulations that will lead to a predicted 2018 landings estimate of no more than 244,292 pounds. And so I have up here vessel limit and season. The reason being the 40-inch minimum size is already fairly high, especially when you consider the higher you go up, the more you're harvesting mature females as opposed to males. Possession limit can't get any more restrictive. And people do seem to be overall very happy with the 1 over 50-inch provision, a nice conservation-oriented regulation that I think some states have talked about following. But so that leaves us with the vessel limit and the season. And so to give a little background about where this 244,292 pounds comes from, the ASMFC implemented what's called a soft harvest target system for the states, which for non-de minimis states, the major players, that's Virginia through Georgia. This is different from your traditional annual quota, where if you go over in 1 year, you have to pay it back in the next year. The way the ASMFC set it up for cobia is that if a state's three-year average of landings exceeds that soft harvest target, then you have to make some adjustments in your regulations. And the reason was cobia is a pulse fishery, and pulse fisheries, when it comes to that MRIB recreational sampling, you get low sample sizes, you get imprecise estimates, and you can get some fluctuations. And so this three-year plan of let the regulations stay in place and see what their long-term effect is, that was believed to be the best route for a fishery like cobia. And a question we got a lot was, does that three-year become retroactive to the point where we're considering 2015 through 2017? And the answer is no. The clock starts now so that we wouldn't technically be required to act until after the 2020 season. If we had, you know, a three-year average over that value, then we would have to act. Although I would imagine it's commonly understood that if we had a huge overage, if Virginia had another 700,000-pound estimate, you might expect some pressure from the other member states to at least take a look at those regs. But once again, the plan, the only thing the plan mandates is that at the end of those 3 years, we revisit. There's going to be a lot of new information at that point. So that was the reasoning behind that decision. So getting to this point, you know, estimating that 244,000 pounds, each state had to submit what's called an implementation plan with the options, the regulations, and what those are believed to generate for 2018 landings. Virginia submitted 7 options in an attempt to get as much opportunity for public input as possible. They were first reviewed by the technical committee, of which I'm the Virginia representative, but the approval authority ultimately lay with the ASMFC, South Atlantic State Federal Fisheries Management Board. The predicted landings, as I said, must be at or below that 244,000 pounds. And the way that we generated those 2018 predicted estimates was by using past performance, the years being 2011 through 2015. And that was an attempt to balance somewhat historical data with recent data, recent performance of the fishery, while excluding 2016, which was a year where some states were forced into closures, some states had regulations that really weren't indicative of what they used to have or what they will have. And so 2016 was not believed to really represent the fishery coast-wide operating at a normal capacity. So that's a justification for those 5 years. And I feel it's necessary just to make this small aside, and I'll try to be as brief as possible. With the MRIP survey, the estimate in terms of numbers of fish is usually more reliable than the estimate in pounds, but almost all of coastwide quotas are measured in pounds, and so we had to find a way to get to that. Species managed by the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council use what's called the SEFSC, the Southeast Fishery Science Center, average weight. And to make a long story short, the Southeast Center takes the data from MRIP, tweaks it a little bit, and so it's going to be a little bit different from the average weight for a cobia that you would get if you just went on the MRIP website. And so when you multiply numbers by the average weight, that's how you get this predicted landings. Other states took the Southeast Center's average weights. For Virginia, which has a very low number of cobia samples by year, that meant if we were to follow what the other states were doing, that would mean we would use the exact same number for all 5 of those years, 2011 through 15, because there were so few samples that you needed to pool them together just to get one average value. You know, the sample sizes were so low. And that was a 34.44-pound average weight, which just from our knowledge of the fishery is obviously a little bit high given what our size limit is. And also, the VMRC has had a relatively long-standing program in the freezer collection project, the Marine Sport Fish Collection Project. For cobia, we get, during that time period, we had an average of about 200 samples per year, whereas the Southeast Center is pulling together 5 years just to get 30 samples. So through talking with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission and National Marine Fisheries Service, we were able to get approval to use our own state-level data, which is, you know, angler-driven, analyzed by staff here, get that to be the approved metric for average weight. So we're able to go ahead with that, but it took a little bit. So this is the table. These are the 7 options that Virginia, that staff submitted to the ASMFC, and options 1, 2, and 5, if you look at this right column, there are little asterisks, and that was just, these were estimates that were over if you looked at the Southeast Center average weight, but they were under if you used our average weight, which was just, you know, for the most part, lower. And so we presented this table at the Finfish Management Advisory Committee meeting back in February. At that time, the ASMFC hadn't approved those options 1, 2, and 5. And so given that knowledge and given the uncertainty about whether those would have ultimately been approved, a lot of the public that were present supported this option 3 in green, which is June 1st through September 30th season and a vessel limit of 3 fish. However, there were a couple members of the public who said, well, if this option one gets approved, we would like to see that one. And so I'm sure during the public hearing we'll hear some of that discussion back and forth now that everyone knows that all seven of these are officially approved. It's just at the time FMAC didn't have the luxury of knowing that. So I'm just going to use this time, and it's on page four of your evaluation, but I'll read in FMAC's recommendation. At this point of the meeting, there was no quorum, so it was an informal recommendation, but it was unanimous by the board members present. And I'll just say implicit in all of these options is the 40-inch size limit, one per person, possession limit. So FMAC recommended a minimum size limit of 40 inches in total length, one per person, possession limit, three per fish daily vessel limit, whichever is more restrictive. Only one fish per vessel can be greater than 50 inches in total length, a season of June 1st through September 30th. And FMAC also recommended that gaffing be allowed to land cobia while fishing recreationally. So that would be a reversal of the past 2 years. And so at this point, that was all the recreational stuff. Here's the commercial side of things. As I said, the ASMFC plan requires adjustments in both sectors in order to get Virginian compliance. So here are the current regulations for commercial. All gears have a minimum size limit of 37 inches total length. For all gears except hook and line, the possession limit is two per commercial fisherman registration licensee, commercial cardholder, with no vessel limit. And for hook and line gear, since if you're a commercial hook and line licensee, since 2014, there's been an exemption that says you may have up to six cobia per vessel per day, regardless of the number of crew members on board. And the commercial plan, there's no allocation as there is in the recreational sector. They're just taking the what's a 50,000-pound annual catch limit and coastwide catch limit and just saying, okay, we're going to set these minimum requirements that are complementary to what's being done in federal waters. And so what's being done in federal waters is a two per person possession limit with a daily vessel limit of no more than six, whichever is more restrictive. And so that will require obviously establishing a vessel limit for the gears that aren't hook and line, and then hook and line, which has the vessel limit but not the possession limit, need to establish a possession limit there. And so I include this graph. This is commercial cobia landings by year, and the bars are separated to show each major gear. The blue, the big bars, are hook and line. Red is pound net, and green is the other gears combined, most of them for confidentiality reasons. And the percentage at the top just shows you what percentage of that annual landings came from the hook and line fishery. And so since 2014, when that exemption was put in place, we've seen a doubling or sometimes tripling of the landings. And so there's when you combine these numbers with North Carolina's landings, you have a landings value that exceeds that coastwide annual catch limit every year since 2014. So that's all I have for the commercial sector. So here is effectively staff recommendation. There's really only one change that staff is recommending, but I wanted to include all the other recreational measures just so that the commission could see it. And so staff recommends maintaining the 40-inch total length minimum size limit, one per person daily possession limit, or three per vessel daily limit, whichever is more restrictive, maintaining the provision of only one of those three being allowed to be over 50 inches total length. And then here's the one amendment, establishing a June 1st through September 30th open season as opposed to a June 1st through September 15th. And so that sort of ends the staff recommendation for the recreational sector. I leave this bullet point up here, no gaffing permitted. This is something that has been in place for the past 2 years, but staff has remained largely on the sidelines of this discussion for lack of data supporting either way. And this has been something that was brought forth by stakeholders and mostly discussed between stakeholders and the commission. And so staff is once again going to not recommend something either way and request that the commission solicit the public's input specifically on that. So, and then in commercial, staff recommends for all gears maintaining the 37-inch total length minimum size limit and establishing a possession limit of 2 cobia per commercial fisherman per day or 6 per vessel per day, whichever is more restrictive, and having no seasonal closure, which is something that may have to be adjusted later in the season. The National Marine Fisheries Service has the authority to do in-season closures if it looks like that coastwide quota will be met. So that's all I have. I thank you for your attention, and we'll answer any questions you might have.
Questions from the commission?
I have one.
Dr. Neal.
I had several, but you answered most of them. Good
well,
job.
That's good.
Good, good.
And this is kind of, I think, I already know the answer, but you didn't cover it in this thing. Staff is planning on keeping the cobia permit and mandatory reporting. That's nothing, none of that will be changed.
Yes, that will be the same as last year. And just as an update, what we're doing is for people who didn't report last year, we're turning off their eligibility to obtain the permit. But if they call us and provide us with a report for last year, we can put the report in, or they send in a trip report, and then they're able to get the permit. So allowing them to get used to the system.
Further questions? The gaffing issue. You said y'all are on the sidelines pertaining to that. I think I asked Mr. O'Reilly the other day if there were some mortality concerns involved with that.
So the last stock assessment, which had data up through 2012, used the discard mortality. This is just general discard mortality of 5%. And obviously, the common sense would tell you that if you released a cobia that had also been gaffed, that would probably add on to the percentage that it would die. But staff really has no way of quantifying what the mortality would go up to at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's reasonable to believe that people do think that must be a legal fish, and they gaff it, and then they measure it out, and it's not. And they say, well, I don't want to have this in my cooler and throw it back. I don't think anyone would deny that that happens, but it's difficult to know the extent to which that's occurring. We haven't necessarily received reports from law enforcement saying that, oh, we see a lot of dead fish, or we see this happening a lot. So it's just something that, absent further information, it's tough for staff to say that this is needed for conservation benefit.
Okay. I think you answered the question then. Any further questions? Rob, I'd like to ask you a question, if I could, just to clarifications before we get into the weeds with this. Can you just go over, not to identify the caller, but the concern pertaining to commercial hook and line that you dealt with the other day?
Yes.
Put out a little bit, because I think that likely will come up. So
a little more background is that the federal plan was in existence through the South Atlantic Council with National Marine Fisheries Service as oversight. And there was always a 2 per person in that plan. And we know we have a state waters fishery. So in 2014... perhaps we weren't right where we should be with the commercial hook and line and the crew, but everything about that had started in 1995. So there was about a 20-year track record of working with the commercial hook and line. The problem that has arisen is now we have a state waters plan. The Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, FMP, is for state waters. And it's also a compliance element, it's required. So all of a sudden, we have had to face the fact that the 2 per person in Virginia means 2 per commercial fisherman registration licensee, because the law requires anyone who is fishing commercially to be a commercial registrant. And so we don't have the latitude that maybe Georgia would have, where Georgia has mainly a federal waters fishery, and they may have 2 per person, and in fact, they don't have to be licensed the way you are in Virginia. But we've had this law since 1993, as far as what a commercial fisherman registration licensee is, and staff just doesn't see how we can ignore that, because it will be a compliance issue, and we also are looked at by the other states, because right now, you know, we're sitting barely in first place with our recreational quota, I'll call it a quota, and our commercial quota is somewhat close to North Carolina. So there is scrutiny there, and it would be very problematic to try at this time with a state waters plan to not realize that we've got to go with a person being a commercial fisherman registration licensee. It is possible.
As we discussed.
To work forward with this, and it's a shame that it hasn't been worked forward earlier, but we didn't really know the full scope of the ASMFC plan on how it would be finalized. In fact, I was at the meeting when the final words were from North Carolina on the two per person, which doesn't help us with our commercial fisherman registration licensee. So I think one approach here could be, we can't do anything about that this year. We have to abide by the law. But we can look towards getting the General Assembly to look at this fishery similar to an approach where crew or helpers could be allowed.
And a way to do that would put a provision in there, and you helped me, Kelsey, a little bit, is put a provision in there that would allow by regulation, the Marine Resources Commission could then identify those fisheries that would allow a helper without a commercial fishery registration.
We're very supportive of that. I think the problem with commercial hook and line is each hook and line is a gear. And if you are fishing commercially, you have to be licensed for that gear. So this ASMFC plan brought everything front and center to the way our laws are written compared to other states. And yes, Commissioner, I think that that would definitely be the approach there. And
either we could do it, or a commercial fisherman through their local delegate could do it, and we would respond accordingly to attempt to accommodate that, considering whatever other guidance we've received from policy.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions in reference to that inquiry from Mr. O'Reilly? From Mr. O'Reilly? I wanted to get that out there before the questions came. That's what we're dealing with as far as the helper on the boat's concerned. Okay. Further questions? This is a public hearing. Does anyone wish to be heard on this matter? If you do, raise your hand. And Chris, I see you. You're first up. Let's go. State your name for the record, please, sir. Good to see you here again.
Good to see you. Chris Ledford, commercial fisherman. And I tell you, for a couple meetings, I've been putting this off. And, you know,
you waited for me, right?
I did. I wanted to welcome our two newest members first, Mrs. Lusk and Ms. Everett. And I haven't had a chance to do that, but welcome to the commission as serving. We appreciate you being here, and thank you for it. And then welcome back to you, Commissioner. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
I'm still here. We're still busy doing different things. Absolutely. I still have three commercial hook and line permittees in my family, my mother, my wife, myself. I have a great issue, and so do a number of people I've brought or who have asked to come here today who have come on their own. I suggested, you know, my behest and others, you know, with this last topic that you just discussed. I have a great issue with the fact that, so my first question is, if we have a commercial fisherman who's a gill netter and then they have mates, are they still going to be two per gill net?
Rob, you can answer the question. Go ahead. You were good at advising me, but the answer is based on the gear license. Go ahead.
Two per any commercial fisherman registration licensee. And I think the situation that we've run into is the gear license. That's really the situation. So a gill net is licensed. All gill nets are licensed. If someone fishes an array of seven, they're all licensed. Pound nets are licensed. Hall seine are licensed. Yes, we recognize they have helpers, just like has been going on with commercial hook and line. But it's two per CFRL regardless.
Right. So if you're gill netting, it's still two for...
You know what? You're asking a good question, because it's the same question that we've had a number of
I just can't understand why all of a sudden we are scrutinizing this at the level here in Virginia when these other states aren't at all. You know, you've got three states, you know, Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina that allow their recreational fishermen to sell their catch, and basically it's not even tallied. I mean, the accuracy, I mean, from top to bottom, this has been a rush job for the last 4 years in every aspect, and it just keeps getting worse and worse every year. And now we've been forced and thrown a lot of regulations by, you know, these federal agencies, and now we've come up with something and within our own agency that all of a sudden now we're going to stick to the, you know, the letter of the law as interpreted by, you know, staff. You know, when, you know, can we create a permit for, I mean, we're already limited to the amount of hook and line, you know, crew members we can have. These guys, it's going to be devastating for them, you know, that to go from six fish possibly to two, you know, when their entire, you know, gear type, you know, revolves around maybe three species. I mean, it's just going to be devastating. I find that it's interesting that in 2016, this was added at the last minute at the South Atlantic, this terminology that said, and I quote, more or less, two per license holder or six per vessel, which is more restrictive. And now we're going to apply that to Virginia, you know, under these extremely stringent guidelines, you know, when none of these federals are holding it, they're not making us do it. They've never threatened. They don't have a problem with what we're doing. You know, we have permitted people. We're tracking our crew lists. You know, they don't have a problem with six per vessel. You know, why, when they haven't even raised the specter of enforcing this on any other state, you know, are we going to stick our, you know, we're going to be, once again, Virginia's going to be the person to do what we're thinking is right. You know, I mean, there's legal angles that come at this from another number of directions.
Or one can say that Virginia is the one doing the right thing at this juncture.
I know. And I appreciate that. We've always put the right foot forward, especially, I mean, in everything from aquaculture and you know, we exceed what the FDA requires. You know, we 5 or 6 years ago, against my better recommendations, we went from two fish to one recreational. We didn't get credit for it. You know, you and I have seen it flounder. I kept my mouth, you know, still on the last thing. Whether times are good or bad, we pay the price for New Jersey and New York's overages. It was all I could do to stay seated because I said, you know what, I'm going to save my time for Cobia. It's been a long day. But this just isn't fair, and it's not something that's being enforced on us. You know, we're doing it to ourselves at the request, in my opinion, of some pressure from some outside source on staff. You know, and it's an agenda to take away another knuckle off the hand of our commercial hook and liners. You know, I've been involved in this since day one. We've never exceeded our quota. I mean, there's just so many things. This fishery is healthy. They're going to redo MRIP. I mean, I know. So with that, I've asked my folks, you know, to limit themselves to 45 seconds. There are people who may not want to speak at all, but the folks that are here that agree with what I'm saying that are going to be affected, please stand. So they can see you, even if you're not going to speak. And I implore you, if you want to speak, this is your time. But just try to keep it to, you know, under a minute.
Chris, they can, but I can tell you this. From the first week I'm here, I immediately recognize the issue. I've immediately worked, in all due respect, to cobble a solution, to craft a solution for this. And I promise that we recognize that it's an issue, and we'll do whatever we can to help this along. But at this juncture, in all due respect and all good faith, I can't do anything right now on this other than say it's okay to violate the law, and I can't do it. And look, you and I, we've worked together a long time. You know that's not the way that it goes. But you also know that if I tell you that I'm going to help you, I promise that's going to go. It's going that way as well. So, I mean, I'm not shortcutting anybody as far as a public hearing. But I need you to know that from my perspective in my first 2 weeks here back, because that's the way it's always been.
I know.
Okay.
No doubt about it.
All right, sir.
You know, yep. So I guess the rest of what I have to say is.
No, the door's open, please.
No.
I didn't mean to.
It's.
Look, I'm as frustrated as you are over it. When Rob came to me about it, I'm like, what? And then after looking at it.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, let me finish up then.
Sure.
Let me tell you what's frustrating then. It looks like, guys, we're not going to, you know, it's not going to go well for us. So with that, though, let me tell you that the whole scrutiny on Virginia, the whole scrutiny on the Cobia issue was a special agenda. And I'm going to uncover it. It's public record. It is one or two people have shed the light on this whole thing. At the same time, I've got a group, that's a Cobia aquaculture company that's actively involved at the federal level in chopping, taking the legs off of the commercial hook and line fishery because they want to market their product as the only supply of Cobia on the market. I mean, we got so many things coming after us, it's unbelievable. So I just wanted to go on the record to say that. And I'm working to – it'll be 60 minutes worthy when that's all proven.
I look forward to it. I really do.
So now we've got, somebody has gone to – I just feel like that, this was – it was fine the way it was, and then somehow or another this has been pushed into the limelight so that staff had to act on this. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate –
You're not asking about the gaff issue?
No, I stood proxy. I was at FinFish. I tried to help make a quorum. I want to be part of the solution. You know that.
Yes.
I don't have an issue with the gaff thing other than what the FMAC said, and that is that people want the gaff back because they're responsible about it. These are responsible people. They're responsible salesmen. They're responsible recreational fishermen. They're recreational charter boat captains are responsible.
You talking about those on FMAC?
I'm talking about FMAC and the people who...
No, I'll point them.
Yeah, yes, sir, absolutely. But I'm talking about the people who will be affected by the
right,
gaffing law.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think that they'll do a good thing. I think they'll do the right thing with a gaff in their hands. These people have demonstrated, and I hope when MRIP is dissected and we look at this, that people will get the credit that they have. And these are responsible fishermen and women in a fishery that's been managed, responsibly and, in my opinion, way more proactively than it's needed to be. And we've taken the lead so many times in Virginia.
In all due respect, I hear you loud and clear.
Yes, sir, and I appreciate that, sir. And welcome back.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Anyone else wish to be heard? Let's see, gentleman up here first. Just come forward and state your name, please. Sorry about that bright light.
Captain Will Branson, I represent the Norfolk Anglers Club.
Yes, sir, Will. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the new members of the commission. I represent primarily a recreational anglers club in Norfolk, Virginia, in Hampton Roads, and it also involves the commercial hook and line anglers and the charter captains, six-pack charters primarily. We've been involved in this issue since day one. I've even traveled down to the South Atlantic Advisory Panel for Mackerel and Cobia on my own dime to participate, and the South Atlantic Council meeting to participate down in Florida in the process. So we've been involved in this emotional issue in the last few years quite a bit. We're also the group that proposed the 40-inch minimum total length and the Cobia landing permit. Those are two things. I'm glad, Dr. Neal, you brought it up, that it was part of the law last year for mandatory reporting, and I appreciate the commission and Rob and his staff and what they've done to make that a free and online permit for the anglers. And all feedback is it's gone real well. What our organization would like to see is the continuation of the three per vessel, one per person, up to three per vessel. One over 50 fish, although it's not really welcome, we understand it, and a season length of 1 June to 30 September. As you can see from the information that Ryan put up there, that number three, I think it came in about 30,000 pounds less than, give or take. You could pull that number up. But the bottom line is if you go with that season length at that length and you bring back the gaff, allow us to gaff the fish, there's a pretty good margin there to make up for any gaffing mortality, any releasing mortality. The bottom line is, if you want to net cobia, you need to go out and find a different net than what you typically find on the market for a large fish. And then there's no question of whether or not it's a legal fish. It's those fish that come into that 40-inch total length. Is it 39? Is it 40? My opinion, if you gaff a 39-inch fish, send the Marine Police after you and take your penalty as far as I'm concerned. You can net a 40-inch fish, a 45-inch fish, fine. And it's the larger fish. But I would like to see the gaff come back. And I think with the margins that you have there on that option number three, that gaff really isn't that big of a deal. The last comment I'd like to make is really a point of order on the FMAC committee. I've served as a proxy on the FMAC in previous years. And I'm a little bit surprised. I was out of town. I wasn't able to make the last FMAC as a public speaker. But if there's no quorum, there's no business. That's the bottom line of Robert's Rules. And to not have a quorum and conduct business and make informal recommendations, that's a violation. That's a rules order violation.
Well, it is, but at the same time, let me just flip it around. I mean, if these other folks have had the initiative and the availability to come, do we then just say your time spent traveling from, you know, the eastern shore of Virginia all the way down to Newport News is wasted because now we'll hear from you, go home?
Yes, sir. They're advertised meetings. I don't know how they schedule them. The last point, as a great stand-up man, Commissioner, is if the members don't show,
remove them.
You need to find new members.
We do track attendance and things like that. So
because people do travel to the meetings, they prepare, and to come to a meeting and find out that, you know, they a small minority or non-quorum wants to do business, that's wrong.
Yep.
I mean, that's the point of having Robert's Rules of Orders at these
Understood.
Meetings. That's all I have, sir, subject to your questions.
Thanks. Any questions? Thank you for coming down today. Appreciate it. Next gentleman in the Hawaiian-looking shirt. Brighten up the day. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Avery. I'm a school teacher, and Tuesday was Tacky Tuesday Day, so I got as tacky as I could.
What do you teach?
I teach earth science at high school level. Oceanography is part of earth science.
Got a 15-year-old that just got finished with earth science.
Okay.
Had a good time in there.
Okay.
Yep.
Again,
proceed.
I'm Mike Avery. I'm with the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. We have about 600 members right now in the organization, and we did go out with a poll to survey our anglers to get their feelings on cobia.
Got it.
And our letter and our poll results should be in your packet. Hopefully you had a chance to look at them. Actually, what came back through the poll, surprisingly, was aligned with what FMAC recommended. So our visa recommendation is for a vessel limit of three per person, up to three per boat, or one per person up to three per boat, with a season of 1 June to 30 September. We're also kind of split between the 1 over 50 issue. But most of our anglers are conservation-minded as well, so we support the 1 over 50, only one of the fish being over 50, to protect the spawning females. So we're wanting to support that initiative, and we're happy to see that still put in place because we do want to see the Chesapeake Bay, protect the spawning females here to have because we want the population to continue to spawn and to get healthy for years to come for our children too. The gaffing issue, we definitely want to see our gaff back. Our anglers are clearly upset over the gaff issue. I believe your staff has testified that there's really no data to support whether having the gaff hurts or helps the population. So as we have been told many times in the fishery management community is we're going to use the best available science. So let's do that with the gaff. There is no available science to suggest that, gaffing a cobia hurts or helps the population. So when that time comes in the future, if we have data to suggest that, let's have that conversation. So it's not a conservation measure. It's really, I will admit, yes, there is a couple of knuckleheads who don't know how to use a gaff, and one may be accidentally come off with the hole in the cobia. Does that mean the cobia died? We don't know. Maybe yes or no. But, being a school teacher, you have one child acting up in your classroom. You don't punish the whole class.
Sure they do.
You address, I don't. You address the issue with the student. So if we have people not following the rules and the procedures, let's address it through law enforcement with the individual. Let's not punish everybody and take their gaffes away. So we'd like to see the gaff come back until there is data to suggest that it hurts or helps the population. And with that, we'd like to welcome Commissioner Bowman to VMRC, and we look forward to working with you and our organization, and we hope to have good conversations in the future about fishing.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Avery? Thank you, sir. Who's next? Let's take it by row. Gentleman right here. And then, Mr. Hughes, I think you're next, and then you're next, sir.
My name is Mike Huber. Good afternoon, Commission. I appreciate you hearing my words. I agree with pretty much everything that Will Branson said. I'm a member of the Norfolk Anglers Club. With one exception, I think that you're hurting the charter boat captains by limiting the boat capacity to three. I think it should be four. And that's really all I've got to say. I want to see the gaff come back. And thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you, sir. Next, sir. Afternoon, Captain.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Hughes. I'm a recreational angler from Chesapeake. I'm a member of the Great Bridge Fishermen's Association, and we agree with option number three. We also would like to see the gaffing thing go away. I have a couple questions. One is the mandatory reporting data usage. I was at the meeting last month, and I think that information on how that data will be used will be a good thing for your staff to let the people know what they're going to do with that information, how they're going to use it, when can they use it. I know they got, 5 years or something?
I think it's
on a personal basis. On a personal basis, I like to go fishing by myself. I'm a cobia fisherman. I like to go out to the 12-mile marker. Go out there and anchor up. I'm a chummer. I like to put my chum line out, put my lines out, and fight the all the sharks and the count those rays and all of the other critters that I have to catch. Occasionally, I do catch a cobia, and I want to take that cobia home. I'm only allowed one, and think I'm smart enough fisherman to know, looking at that fish in the water, whether it's a 40-inch fish or not. And I should have the capability to take that fish and put it in my boat. If it requires me to use a gaff, I'm the only guy out there. I mean, try to put a 52-inch cobia in a net. It doesn't work. Folks, please, give me the option to use my gaff to pick that fish home. It's the only one I'm going to catch that day. I'm going home when I get it. I'm done for the day.
Thank you, sir. Well done. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Captain Colson Picorni. I'm a charter fisherman by day, and I also just this year obtained my commercial hook and line license to support additional income for myself and for any future endeavors that I'd like to have. The water has been in my blood since I've been little, and I'll make your time brief because I know you have a lot to get to. But I would love to make my living for the rest of my life off the water. And being with this issue with cobia is that it... I have a couple of bullet points here. It definitely significantly cuts into not just my profits for the year, but profits for one species. Now, I mainly rely on three fisheries, the tautog fishery, the cobia fishery, and the striped bass fishery. As we know, the larger striped bass have already been disappeared, but it's come to the fact that I will have to start relying on other fisheries, getting into other different means of it. So the forms where I don't like gill nets, but I don't want to have to get into a gill net just to make a little extra money on top of chartering. Oystering is great. I don't want to get into oystering. It's not my cup of tea. However, if I have to get into it, I will, in order to make a living on the water. One way or another, I will be on the water for the rest of my life because it's what I love to do and I'm passionate about it.
Good for you.
With that also being said, it's economically devastating having to buy your way into a limited fishery. For me, it set me back about $4,500, and having that special allowance that, as I understand, was written in not too long ago for us to be allowed to have six fish per cardholder per day, I am all for that, and that is one thing that I really feel that if you take away from us, you will find us getting into other fisheries. I'm not a blue line guy, but I know there are plenty of us out there that do go out and catch blue line, hook and line, or do the deep dropping hook and line or other sorts of fisheries hook and line. And it doesn't just affect us, you know. It affects the restaurants. It affects, you know, and from the charter side of the world, it affects the hotels. It affects, you know, your tourism industry. There are people that come in because Virginia in the summer is known for not just offshore tuna fishing. It's known for cobia. People come in from every year. 90% of my customers come from Pennsylvania because they want to catch that once-in-a-lifetime big fish cobia. They want to have that one big fish, or if not, they want to go home with at least a cooler full of three nice fish. And I'm not out there to break the law. I'm not out there to, you know, shove an extra fish or two under the deck. There are guys out there that do that, and they get caught, and they serve their punishment as needed. I'm out there to follow the law as it is, and make sure everybody goes home happy. But in order for us to sustain, in my opinion, a viable fishery, we need to – I like the regulations as they are. Personally, I agree with option number one on a charter level. To me, I think that makes the most sense because there are fish last year. I was fishing with a friend of mine. We saw cobia swimming on the surface over Back River Reef May 2nd. We were looking for drum. May 2nd, he was on top in the water. Wasn't a big fish, but he was there. So I think these fish are here a lot earlier than anybody says. But like I said, guys, on the commercial side, it's a significant investment, and the quality of fish that we provide is better anywhere coming straight from us to the restaurants, to the seafood markets, to the wholesalers, to anywhere that it needs to go, than coming from aquaculture where they got to eat pellets. They're eating exactly what Mother Nature gives them. Menhaden, croaker, and spot, and you can't beat a fresh fish better than that.
Got it.
And that's my two cents. So
thank you, sir.
Very much for your time.
We appreciate it. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Harry Kiriakou, and I am a commercial hook and line fisherman. I've been commercial hook and line fishing for approximately 45 years. I started out with the late Linwood Martin hook and line and sea bass, and fished quite a bit with Joe Mizell. And my passion has been hook and line fishing exclusively. I have worked in other fishing with Halsteins and gill nets, but that really was not my passion. I started packing fish with George from Georgia Seafood at the age of 16 and packed fish with him up until about 6 months ago. I'm 61 now, and my body does not allow me to do that work anymore. I was really looking forward to this summer. I've been spending money on my boat, putting a tower on it, new fuel tank, new steering, new electrical. I'm putting some money into it. And now to have the cobia taken away is really going to affect me. The flounder fishing has been almost non-existent for going on 5 or 6 years now. There's no money in that. The tog season shuts off about the time to get biting good. Here it is. We're in March. There's no tog fishing right now. The weather's been too much cold. And this is really going to affect my income this year. It really is. I wish there was something you could do to help me. And all of us hook and liners. There's not that many of us that do this. I don't think, I'm not sure, I saw the charts you had, how much is hook and line and all. I'm not sure what all that means, but I still see plenty of cobia in the bay. I really do. And I was hoping to make some money at it this year. I've had to quit packing fish. I was a regular at George's, packing for the Hodges brothers and all. I can't do any of that hard work anymore. Got tendonitis and bad knees from walking on concrete all the time, and I don't know how I'm going to replace that income yet.
Understood.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kiriakou. Yes, sir.
My name is Stan Sutliff. I am a recreational fisherman. I belong to 12 fishing clubs here in the Hampton Roads area. I've taken a lot of advice and counsel from a lot of different fishermen and whatnot. A couple of years ago when I was being introduced to saltwater fisheries, I hooked a cobia. I think it was either that or a U.S. Navy submarine. one of the two. But after that, I did learn a valuable lesson about applying the break, if you will. Anyway, if I had attempted to land that, I did have another friend on the boat at the time, but as a result of that interest, I went out and bought a boat, and I'm out there 71 years old, out there fishing by myself along a lot of times, and I would heartily advocate bringing back the opportunity to use the gaff for those larger fish.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Dr. Luckenbach. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Wes Blow. I'm a recreational fisherman. I would strongly ask that y'all do option one, since that got approved. I believe that would be the best season for us. It gives us the opportunity to start fishing for them sooner. As far as the only one fish over 50 inches, I strongly and for that as well. You know, I think that's a good conservation move. The gaffing issue, I've been brought that up many times, and I strongly believe that we should continue to have the no gaffing thing. It's a conservation method that doesn't present or keep anybody from ever going out fishing. You can always go. It's not going to keep you from doing it. As Ryan said, and some other people have said, that there's no data. Well, there is no data on it. But as Ryan said, you know, it's common sense that if you gaff a fish and release it, it's probably going to die. That fish, you know, and the smaller ones just should be common sense that people wouldn't do it. But it happens. But, you know, I'm concerned about the big fish that fall off the hook. This is a hook, a sharp hook that's stuck into their internal organs, and they're flopping around for 2 or 3 minutes. You know, it's going to die. And by not allowing gaffing, you know, if we were going to net that fish and lose it, it's going to live. So this is a regulation that we can do that won't keep any charter from ever getting a charter. It won't keep any person from ever going out and trying to fish. It will just save some fish in the long run. You know, it has come up many times with different things that we don't ever get credit for certain things. You know, like going to one fish back 10, 12, 15 years ago, whatever it was. People always say that we don't get credit for that. Well, Dr. Neal and I, myself, have had conversations over that, and I can't remember exactly how it went. But, you know, if that hadn't have happened, there's no telling what kind of shape we would have been in when the fishery exploded. So we do get credit for things. Like the no gaffing, they say we don't get credit for that, or the only one fish over 50 inches. Some people have referenced that we don't get credit for that because there's no data. Well, we do get credit for that, you know, because the only one fish over 50 inches helps preserve some of those larger fish. And granted, ASFMC and South Atlantic Council doesn't recognize that yet, but like Ryan said, it is common sense that if we're protecting more of these bigger fish, it's better off for us, and that's the credit that we get, that we still have the fishery. As far as getting in a large fish by yourself, you know, on a boat, and you have to use a gaff, well, I personally have netted by myself with no one else on the boat an 82-pound fish. So it can be done. Dr. Neal and myself have a friend that has netted a 99-pound fish. So it can be done. Last year, the biggest fish caught in Virginia was only 82 pounds. That number has been steadily going down over the last 15 years. So that's another reason I feel it's important for that 50-inch fish, you know, and to protect it. But the no-gaffing rule, it won't keep anybody from ever going. It won't keep anybody from making a charter. And we will have more fish that survive.
Thank you, Mr. Blow.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
How you doing? My name is Zachary Hoffman. I run and operate a charter business, and I also have my hook and line license. I've been hook and lining cobias for probably 8 years, so this is definitely going to be a real jab in the stomach. When I'm not charter fishing, a good supplemental income to the year is commercial fishing for cobia. Like others have stated, you know, flounder, that's pretty much non-existent. Tog, yeah, that's good. I mean, you know, we make some money doing that. But my entire year income is wrapped around cobia. I've literally invested everything I own into cobia fishing, into my boats. I have two boats. I have another captain that works for me. He also, you know, is dependent on cobia. So I would like for you to – I know you said you can't do nothing, but if you could work something with that. And with this whole gaffing thing, this is all originated from the man that just spoke. And it's really a frustrating thing to me because with charter fishing, my clients, they half of them even know how to hold a fishing rod. So let alone getting them to lead a fish, a 50-plus inch fish, into the net is very, very frustrating. And a lot of times it's more dangerous than the gaff would actually be. And he spoke about the 82-pound fish. One of the stories I always remember, actually, the mate that works on my boat, his largest fish to date, which is, what, 105 pounds, Wes?
Sir, don't reference.
Well, he
address us, please.
He couldn't land that fish by netting it, so my best friend that mates for me was dropped off on his boat so it could gaff, so he could land the fish. So what I'm getting at is, a fish of a lifetime, a gaff is the better way to do it. And I've caught several fish with gaffs in the side of the fish still alive. So the 5% mortality rate, I mean, I would say a fish, what's the mortality rate with just netting a cobia? There's still got to be some kind. I mean, don't get me wrong, we do our best to revive the fish and let it go, but there's definitely some that don't make it. So, I mean, I just feel like that is an issue not worth fighting for. And I like the number three option. So, thanks for hearing me.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name's Sean Charnock. I'm a Virginia commercial hook and line fisherman. I don't have as much time as some of these guys have. I got 4 years now. This is my fourth year. I am invested in cobia fishing. Everything I've ever done in fishing revolves around cobia fishing. To take us back to two fish, it's going to end it for me. There's no way I can continue. If I can find another fishery to get into, and, I mean, flounder's it during the summer, and summertime is, you know, it's cobia time. And I don't know where I'm going to find two other cardholders to fish with me every day during the summer so I can make a living. So if this goes through, I'm pretty much done. I don't know what other options there are. And I got one question, and I just ask for you all to be compassionate when you deal with this situation, because you're going to hurt a lot of people. All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Not as much of a speaker as the rest of them, but my name is Nathan Henry. I got a hook and line license. I just want to say, you know, the two fish per, you know, card holder is just, it's going to make me hurt this summer, you know, so I'm just, that's really all I got to say. It's just,
thank you,
it's the bread and butter in the summer, you know.
Thank you, sir. Understood. Anyone else? All right. Public hearing is closed. Matters before, yes, sir. Do you want to speak at the public hearing?
Well, I didn't know if somebody had requested information about mandatory reporting, and I thought I could shed some light on the 1/50.
Sure.
And I guess I'll admit that I feel compelled to address it, only because I think some of the suspicions about its benefits arose from a mistake of mine. When we were going through the implementation plans and people asked, was the 1/50 incorporated? And I had not incorporated that mathematically into our projections, and that was only because it was not required by the ASMFC plan. We were focusing on what was required by the plan when we were coming up with these options.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will say that there is a real benefit to keeping the 1/50. There's a reason staff recommended it, and a lot of it is common sense, you know, preserving more spawning size females. But the other side of it, which is we always have to discuss the MRIP ramifications. And if you look at the number of samples we have, which is very small, each sample can have a very, very large impact on the overall estimate when they take those samples and expand it up. So when we have a regulation that says only 1/50 can be allowed, if you were to take that away, you have an intercept that has, you know, maybe 45-inch, 45-inch, 54-inch. You suddenly allow for the possibility of all three of those fish to be 54 inches. That average weight is going to jump up. And so we get credit in the form of those kind of intercepts not causing our average weight to balloon. And so taking that MRIP number and multiplying it by the average weight is how they get that MRIP number of pounds, which has been a thorn in our side. So the big benefit to keeping the one over 50 is it kind of keeps the average size of the fish in check, in addition to the common sense benefits of it. So wanted to point that out just as part of justification for why staff is including that in the recommendation.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Could you ask about the mandatory reporting? How are you going to use that data?
Yeah, please.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Thank you, Cap.
That was the first reason I came up here. We got into this a little bit briefly at the FMAC meeting, and the way I had explained it was whenever we're looking at fisheries data, a lot of the times we're monitoring trends. We're saying, okay, what does this look like 10 years ago compared to now? And so right now we're at a position where we have 1 year of data, and it's obviously you can't have established a trend with just 1 year of data. We would have been prepared to put forth some of our data from the 2017 mandatory reporting in these implementation plans if the time frame had been inclusive of 2017. Fortunately, with the 2011 through 15, we were still able to incorporate our Cargus donations, which, very fortunate, it allowed some more options to be put on the table. So the short answer is there just haven't been enough years of data to make it a viable source. But angler reporting programs have been used in stock assessments. South Carolina had a charter boat logbook program that was used in the cobia stock assessment. So we know that there's precedence even within this fishery for angler-provided data to be used for real management decisions, for real scientific decisions. And so, you know, the unfortunate plea we have to make is to be patient and keep working on it, and it will pay off. I will say that not to throw another acronym out here, but ACCSP, which is kind of the data people of the ASMFC, MRIP has directed them to start exploring alternatives for fisheries like cobia, you know, like some of these other fisheries that they would call pulse or small sample size fisheries. So MRIP, the people who come up with these recreational estimates, are actually asking the states to try to come up with some innovative ways, and Virginia has been once again at the forefront of that, implementing this program. So I believe there's a need for it. It seems as though both the feds and the states have an interest in this, and it's just a matter of getting enough years under its belt for it to have those dots that we so often put up on this screen.
Right.
So if you have any further questions, I'm happy to answer. I have some of the specific numbers committed to memory, but you know, when we didn't have 100% compliance from the permittees who signed up, and so in order to get an estimate of total landings, we had to do some sort of expansion, and when we did that expansion all the way up, in terms of numbers of fish, we got a number that was lower, but in the same range as what MRIP had. And so when you talk about will this data be used, the question of whether or not data can be used is often answered by saying how does it compare to other established data sets. And so the fact that when we put it through the machine, put the little tweaks to it to fill in the gaps, the fact that it's in the same ballpark as MRIP was in 2017, which is a much more reasonable estimate in terms of pounds and numbers of fish, it was comparable, and I think that's a good start, and I think it's reason to keep going, because in a few years we may be able to use it more explicitly.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Matters before the commission. Mr. Ballard.
I had a question for staff. I was hoping just sort of to get a rudimentary overview of the commercial fishing license and the two per license. Is basically the thought there that as opposed to other gear types, hook and lines often performed alone. So whereas folks fishing for cobia and other gear types would be able to get the greater vessel limit when they have more than one license holder on board, hook and line, you're limited to that two per license holder?
Well, one of the big differences, of course, is commercial hook and line, and I'm sure 100% of the people here are targeting cobia. And when you're looking at pound nets, when you're looking at gill nets, it really is a bycatch fishery for most of those guys going out. I don't have the numbers in front of me to say what percentage of pound netters and gill netters are working with licensed versus unlicensed. But I think one of the points that hasn't been brought up is how the cobia possession limit is worded in regulation. So if you think about flounder, we were just talking about flounder, it's a trip limit. So it doesn't matter how many people are on board, that trip you're allowed this many pounds of flounder. Striped bass, people have quota. So whoever's on that boat, I have this many tags, this amount of pounds of quota. A lot of the commercial hook and line fisheries, cobia, summer flounder, red drum, speckled trout, when you're talking commercial hook and line, is a personal possession limit. And so what makes it different is that when you have a trip limit, it's not defined by the number of people. It's defined by the trip. Whereas commercial hook and line for cobia and all those other species is a personal possession limit. And so when you talk about what's the definition of a commercial fisherman, as Rob had referenced earlier, we have it defined as, you know, someone who has that CFRL. And so in order to possess, to hold, and then later give to another, in order to fish the gear, you need to be licensed. And so you can't contribute to that vessel limit unless you are a commercial fisherman. And I don't know if that makes sense, but because it's defined as a personal possession limit in reg, it makes it different from a lot of the gill net and other, you know, oyster and other type of fisheries.
Okay, so help me understand, if I may.
Sure, absolutely.
That we used to have an exemption for this commercial hook and line that would allow six fish per boat. Is mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah, and it's technically still in place.
Of the number of licenses on there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're recommending striking that exemption. And why? What exactly is driving that recommendation?
As Rob said, part of it was the implementation of this interstate plan, which says, you know, at the federal level, they just say two per person. In federal waters, there's no cobia permit. So you don't necessarily need any sort of commercial fishing credentials to catch a cobia in federal waters with the intent to sell. That's how it's written up in the South Atlantic Council's plan, is there's no commercial fisherman, there's a person who catches with the intent to sell. So for them, they're saying two fish per person. And the ASMFC, they said, well, it's a complementary plan. And this is what Rob was referring to, where when we were voting on it, they threw in that language. They said, well, if the spirit of this is complementary, we should do what the feds are doing. Let's do two per person. And so that's what went through. And as I said, with the way the regulation is written in what you can possess in Virginia, that has to be interpreted as a commercial fisherman.
Okay. So we have the feds that are regulating the federal waters,
mm-hmm.
and then ASMFC is the multi-state kind of jurisdictional council, whatever you want to call it, that is providing guidance for state waters. Is that correct?
I don't know if, and Rob, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would use probably a stronger word than guidance. Okay. It is all the states coming to the table and saying, this is what is we're going to do.
We wish it was guidance. At times.
Everything we do with ASMFC is backed by federal law. So that's the compliance element. So in 1995, this all started with weak fish. And yes, states go out of compliance, but they certainly come into compliance very quickly because the risk is you get both the commercial and the recreational fisheries shut down if the Secretary of Commerce finds that you're out of compliance. What has really happened here is a couple things. One, cobia went off the charts in 2015. Whether or not you look at MRIP as a gospel set of data or not, the harvest was so high that all of a sudden everyone got activated on cobia, both commercially and recreationally. The problem commercially is that it was prior to the implementation of the ASMFC plan, it was talking about federal waters. It's not that the feds, through the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, didn't point out that we weren't really the way we should be because we didn't just have two per person. We had one commercial hook and license holder and a vessel limit of six. It was pointed out, but frankly, that was something that maybe was ignored and could be, because when we started on the recreational road that you remember in 2015, one of the first questions was, if we don't comply with the rule of the South Atlantic Council, can we be preempted? And it became pretty clear that we could not be preempted, and NMFS could not preempt our authority in state. Now that we're with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, which everyone wanted, you know, from Virginia down to Georgia, everyone wanted to get with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission in a complimentary pan, we're under mandates. We have to turn in our regulation. So imagine what happens if we just turn in a regulation to the ASMSC that ignores what has just passed in their fishery management plan. Then all of a sudden, that's the scrutiny I mentioned before. We're in an awkward place. We know we're in an awkward place. But we do need this next session of the General Assembly to somehow, some way, be able to modify the existing law that is pretty clear in 28.2.241D, especially about what is required if you're going to be commercial fishing. It's going to take a commercial fisherman registration license. So we've been boxed in, quite frankly, because we have an interstate plan, and it reflects directly on Virginia. Matter of fact, it reflects on everyone from New York down to Georgia right now. So it's this isn't a casual sort of investigation. This has been over several months that we've tried to figure out what we can do, and the answers are pretty limited.
And have we had these discussions with ASMFC and told them that maybe I don't have the right understanding of it, but it almost seems somewhat like semantics to me, and because the way we term things in our state code, that we're being held to a stricter standard than maybe was intended. And has that been discussed with them, and do we have a feeling that they are going to look very unkindly upon any noncompliance?
We do, and one reason is the situation at the ASMFC is that last year New Jersey decided that it would go slightly outside the recreational measures for summer flounder. They're found out of compliance like that. Up to the Secretary of Commerce and Interior, Secretary of Commerce had to rule within 30 days, I believe, and eventually the Secretary of Commerce ruled that it really wasn't out of compliance that bad. So what has happened at ASMFC, they are heightened in terms of their awareness of any plan now that has bad compliance elements. We recently went through a process, and it hasn't ended yet, for Menhaden as far as where all that will end in terms of a compliance finding. There were many policy board meetings at ASMFC and much hand-wringing about the decision of Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross on the New Jersey situation. But the New Jersey situation was very similar in that maybe it wasn't considered egregious, but we don't know that. I mean, and there's also things such as, you know, where our governor sits compared to what Wilbur Ross, you know, what his role is. So the answer is no, not directly, but the expectation is pretty clear. If the ASMFC has this management plan, then they're expecting two per person. And we know in Virginia that we're hamstrung because we don't just let anyone commercial fish. You have to have the commercial fisherman registration license. I could certainly see, a situation where we can remediate this, but I really do think the General Assembly's involved. So go ahead.
Mr. Ballard?
Would a helper on board not qualify for that if they're basically viewing it the same as a recreational, that you could have a helper on board with recreational license?
Commercial hook and line regulation is interesting because it actually says you can't have a commercial and recreational trip going on at the same time. Okay. So that, but and we did talk about that as well, but that's precluded.
It goes way back when.
But what you are suggesting is where we hope we end up by this time next year, that we hope we can say, you know, granted, every rod and reel is a gear. It's a commercial gear, but if there's a license holder like we've had before since 2014, then the helpers can be there. So, I mean, that's the intent today anyway, and I'm sure that'll go forward that way.
And there's no way to do this through regulation. It would have to be done through state code.
That's correct.
You'd have to change the law.
Because of that section I quoted, 28.2.241.
So. That's a pickle.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about it. Further questions? Okay. Ms. Lusk?
I'm not sure if this is a good question or not, really, but is there, and just trying to think of ways to band-aid the situation, is there any way to issue a provisional hook and line, like in this particular situation, that would allow people to have helpers that had a license? I mean, a very limited sort of deal. Is it too late for that? Is it possible to
it's a good idea, but
like
the problem is if you're not already a commercial fisherman registration licensee, you have to wait 2 years from the date that you apply. That's the problem there. So even to be provisional, it would take that. And, you know, really, up until 2015, your idea might have been something that could go forward. But before 2015, it was, I'll just say, it was very straightforward for someone to get an exception to the commercial fisherman registration licensee. The commission in 2015 said, well, there is this delayed entry of 2 years. We need to start using that because we're starting to impact other fisheries by just letting someone, you know, get an exception. So, yes, it's been modified. Your request could have worked prior to that, prior to 2015, but, you know, not now.
And the delayed entry goes back all the way to the origin of commercial fishing, where the commercial fishermen themselves wanted the two-year delay to make sure that someone was very serious. They weren't just immediately targeting the species at that instant moment because of an opportunistic issue. So, further questions? Okay, the public hearing is closed, sir. The matter is before the commission for action.
Do you want us to take the commercial and the recreational separately?
Do it, sir. In all due respect, you can do whatever you wish.
No, I can't.
Or you can take one and leave the other, or do whatever you want to do. Or you can take up gaffing, because I'll be quite honest with you, I wasn't going to get out in front of it, but whatever you want to do.
You want to have a long discussion? You want to have a quick vote?
Sir, you're the one that's getting the same pay, or both of us, it doesn't matter.
I guess, all right, I'll make some comments. First of all, the overall support from the recreational community, charter boats, and just recreational anglers for conservation measures has been impressive. The support of keeping the almost universal support of keeping a three-fish boat limit when we could go to four fish has been impressive. Also, the support of keeping the one over 50 inches is I was surprised of how much support we had from that. And so I think that's kudos. I do want to correct one thing. There have been comments that is a one-person gaffing thing. That's not true. We were 2 years ago, we were struggling to come up with any way to keep this Cobia season open. And it was John Zedron sitting next to me that made the gaffing no gaff proposal. He just out of the blue, he came up with a slate of things, and we passed it just to keep us having some type of cobia season. And then last year, we went to two fish to three fish boat limit. We were going to do that, but it was actually Commissioner Ballard who said, I'm comfortable doing that if we keep the no-gaff provision. So that's where those came from. It came from up here. And we were struggling with anything to keep us to have a cobia fishery. And after that first year, y'all were pretty dang happy. And we did something. But having said all that, my recommendation is basically just to go with what FinFish, even though Will says that he didn't think FinFish should have made a recommendation, although it totally mirrored what he said. That's going to be my recreation proposal, just to go with what FinFish recommended. Personally, I like the May 15th opening, but it was pretty universal June 1 opening, and they gave their reasons for that. And then the commercial would be just to do staff recommendation. So basically, staff recommendation letting those anglers have their gaff back, and please use them responsibly.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
Motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Ballard. Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much.
What you wanted.
Thank you. Rob, we have some discussion items. If we can, it's been a long, long day. If we can be relatively brief, understanding that we're going to do the public hearing. And, I mean, I know y'all work hard on them, but it was a long morning.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Please. Thank you, sir.